You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we chat this Friday afternoon, first things first, welcome to the weekend. It's not exactly a weekend for the Rockets, who are on a business trip this afternoon, a flight out to San Francisco. They'll get there tonight, get a full night's rest, then practice over at, I believe, the University of San Francisco tomorrow afternoon. That's Saturday, gearing up for Sunday night's huge Game 3, the showdown, series tied at 1, the Western Conference Finals between the top-seeded Rockets and the second-seeded and defending champion Golden State Warriors. So we talked to them at practice today, also got a bit of a health update on Chris Paul, his foot, and Luke Bamute, his shoulder. Nothing major there. I will discuss it in the third segment of the show before we close things out. But first, I'm going to take a broader view. We did this on Tuesday, called it the 30,000-foot view in terms of this series and beyond, because with the Rockets stacking up to the Warriors, of course, this series is everything for the 2018 season. But beyond that, there's also implications based on, obviously, if you lose, but also how, if that were to be the case. Hopefully, the Rockets are able to take 4-7, and after winning by 22 points in Game 2, I think they're feeling pretty good about that. But in terms of matching up with the Warriors, it's not just about this season. It's about, I would say, really the foreseeable future for this iteration of the Rockets, the James Harden, Chris Paul era. So once in a while during the series, we are going to take a step back, and with three consecutive off days, it feels appropriate here to step back from the micro and do a little bit of macro as we did the other day. Now, I know I promised you some X's and O's talk in terms of the successful adjustments the Rockets made between Game 1 and Game 2. That's still to come. Please stay tuned this weekend. I've got what I think is a really good guest lined up, but without giving him away, let's just say he's a part of the Rockets' traveling party, and Friday's a very busy day for the Rockets. They're packing, they're getting on a long plane flight to San Francisco tonight, and then they're going to settle in. So I think that show, more micro X's and O's based, I'm going to do that on the phone from San Francisco tomorrow, so stay tuned for this. Today's show, just like Tuesday's 30,000-foot episode, is going to be a little broader. And the first segment, I'm going to discuss how the Rockets win the series, because certainly that's optimal. We'll discuss the if they lose it in the second segment. But in terms of winning, and the obvious answer, they've got to win 3 out of 5. But I think winning not just Game 2, but in a blowout the way they did, final margin of 22, and this could have easily been 35 had the Rockets not called off the dogs with about 4 minutes left, that, in my opinion, psychologically means a lot to the Rockets' health long-term in this series, because it does two things. First, you always hear the term must-win game, and technically, there's no must-win game until you're facing elimination. I understand that, technically. But from a practical standpoint, I think everyone around the Rockets understood that Game 2 was a must-win game. If they would have been going back to Oakland down 0-2, essentially two games off serve in terms of home court, that would have been as close to a death blow as you can possibly face in this type of series against that type of opponent. So for the Rockets to not only survive that, but then win in blowout fashion, that means a lot, I think, in terms of establishing the right mindset that when the Rockets bring their A game, it's good enough to beat the Warriors, even with a Warriors team that had Kevin Durant scoring 38 points on 13 of 22 shooting. And as far as the Rockets are concerned, James Harden didn't even have his best game. Sure, he had 27 and 10, but he shot just 3 of 15 from behind the arc. The story in Game 2 were the role players, the Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Trevor Ariza tier. Gordon 6 of 9 from 3, PJ Tucker 8 of 9, Trevor 7 of 9. It's the role players, the depth, and that's what's made Houston comparable or better to Golden State all season long. Of course, it's not the stars. Now, granted, the injuries to Steph Curry does help a little bit, but James Harden, Chris Paul versus Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, you're not going to win this series just based on the stars. Where the Rockets have an advantage and have over most of the 94 games, regular season plus 12 playoffs to this point, over Golden State, is that the guys in that 5-9 spot in each team's respective rotation are generally better on Houston. It wasn't the case in Game 1. It was the case in Game 2. And the good news is that if you look at the season as a whole, it's pretty clear that Game 1 was much more of an outlier for the Rockets than Game 2 was. Now, maybe the shooting percentages were a little inflated in Game 2, and you can't count on that every single night. But by and large, Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, Eric Gordon, those are big difference makers. And so I think Game 2, while certainly an extreme example in terms of their abilities, it's much more reflective of what they bring you as opposed to Game 1, for example, when P.J. Tucker and Luke Bamute were combined 0 of 9, and Trevor Ariza was only able to play for, 23 minutes due to extreme foul trouble, 5 fouls just a couple of minutes into the third quarter. And Eric Gordon, who was semi-efficient, but 6 of 13 from the field, a lot of his points came in garbage time, and also had 4 turnovers to the Rockets' 16 in that game. So generally, I think it bodes well that Game 2, the route to success for the Rockets was much more comparable to what they've been able to do all season long in terms of being level or slightly ahead of the Warriors. But as I said following the Game 1 loss, a big part of when you're playing the defending champions, maybe the most talented team in the history of the NBA, the Hampton Fives, those 4 All-Stars, etc., etc., is psychology. So it's big that when you face the pressure of a must-win game, you can respond, because it's not a given that the Rockets take one of these next 2 in Oakland. You would like to, but I don't think it is essential. Because even if you fall down 3-1, and by the way, the Warriors have blown a 3-1 lead before, in case you guys have forgotten, but being down 3-1 when you're only one game off serve, so to speak, in terms of home court advantage, in my opinion, it's significant, but it's not a fatal blow, in my opinion. Just go back to the 2015 semis between the Rockets and Chris Paul's Clippers. Yes, they were down 3-1, but all they had to get, truly, was Game 6. Game 5 and Game 7, they had an enormous advantage based on those games being within the friendly confines of Toyota Center. And I've said, I feel like home court advantage gets bigger the deeper you go into a series. Now, yes, because of that, I think it would be easier to take Game 3 or Game 4 in Oakland rather than Game 6 for the same reasons. Game 5 and Game 7 in Houston, I think home court means a lot, and the same would be true for Oakland in Game 6, either in an elimination game for the Warriors or a potential closeout game, depending on who would be up 3-2 at that point. So ideally, yes, you want to win these games. Well, of course, for the Rockets, the approach is not going to be, we want to take one. No, the approach is every game is its own unique entity, and if they can take both of them the same way they did in Utah when it went back, tied at 1, they would absolutely love to do that. And I think that's something else the Game 2 showed you, which is that on any given night, if the Rockets play their A game, they can win this, even against the Warriors, even with Kevin Durant playing like an MVP. The Rockets took quite a shot. Again, Durant, 38 points, 13 of 22 shooting. So I think that bodes extremely well. Hopefully it happens in Game 3 or Game 4, but even if it takes until later on, I don't think you're going to see another scenario where there's much doubt in the Rockets' minds. They know now that they can compete. They know that their A game is not only good enough, for all the talk we had in the national media about the Rockets having a microscopic margin of error, folks, Kevin Durant had an epic game, and the Rockets could have won by 35. So as far as the Rockets having almost no margin for error, that's silly. The Rockets could give up 20 points from how they played in Game 2 and still won that game, probably comfortably. So with all the noise that's out there, and the Rockets try to block it out, but as Mike D'Antoni has said throughout the week, sometimes it gets through. You do get text, you do get interview requests, things like that. Sometimes you need something that you can draw upon. And I said early in the Utah series that I thought the way the Rockets bounced back in Minnesota in that Game 4 after losing Game 3, that crazy turbo nuclear button 71-30 stretch, was instrumental in the Rockets drawing upon that experience going to Utah. Well, I think in this series, facing a lot of adversity after Game 1, a must-win scenario, and not only winning against the must-win scenario, but winning comfortably, proving that your best, even against the Warriors, is not just good enough, but enough to blow them out, that is enormous, because I don't think from here on out you're ever going to see the Rockets panic. Even if somehow they're down 3-1, again, you're only one game in terms of home court off serve. You just got to win Game 5? Okay, well, look what happened Game 2 at Toyota Center. So, again, I'm not expecting the Rockets to go down 3-1. What I'm saying is that not just winning Game 2, but in the blowout fashion they did, I think it makes the Rockets a lot more poised the rest of the way. Does it guarantee that they're going to win? No. The Warriors are extremely good. This sport is very hard, and there are no guarantees. But I think the Rockets, in terms of their confidence, it's not that they weren't already, but I think certainly playing the Warriors, the playoff Warriors, in a setting where you know they're going all out, as I mentioned in Wednesday night's recap, this is the first time in the Kevin Durant era that they're not up 2-0 after the first two games of a playoff series. This is not a team that plays with its food, to go with the common analogy thrown out these days in NBA circles. They have killer instinct, and you could see it in the eyes of Steve Kerr, Kevin Durant in the first half. They wanted that game, and they wanted to knock the Rockets out. They couldn't. And so I think ultimately for the Rockets, you want to win Game 3, you want to win Game 4, and I don't expect them to take it easy. There's a fine line between not being pressured and taking it easy, but I certainly don't think the Rockets, especially led by Chris Paul, now at 33 years old, last few years of his prime and the deepest he's ever been in the playoffs, I can't see a scenario where the Rockets take it easy. But in theory, yes, it's a fine line to walk. You can't take a game lightly, but I think that's not something you really worry about this deep in the playoffs. What you worry about is pressing, panicking, and I think at this point the Rockets know what they need to do. There's no guarantee that they're going to be able to execute it every minute of every game. It's also possible that the Warriors might have a game, just like the Rockets did in Game 2, where they have guys shooting their role players 7 of 9 or 8 of 9, or in the case of Eric Gordon, 6 of 9 from 3. You might have a regression to the mean game from Steph Curry here and there. I think Steph Curry, the grade 2 MCL injury, is going to consistently limit him defensively. Offensively, some of the shots he missed, quite frankly, he may make them in Oracle. And the Rockets just have to roll with the punches, and at some point you may lose a game because of that, and that's what happens when you play another great team. Sometimes they are going to have a night the same way you did in Game 2. But I think for the Rockets moving forward, the key in terms of going deep into the series is no panic, no pressure. Every game is its own entity. Go out and execute your game plan, and if the Rockets are able to do that, then I think we have a ton of data. 82 regular season games in which the Rockets won 65, six more than the Warriors. Now 12 playoff games. Each squad is 9-3, the top two ranked teams in the NBA. That shows you that the Rockets, they're not some cute lesser team that's trying hard but just ultimately can't compete. No, we've got 94 games of data that the Rockets absolutely can compete. The only thing you worry about, as I said after Game 1, is somehow the psychology and daunting task of it all, the Warriors' apparent inevitability, at least according to some in the national media, taking a toll. Well, now, I don't think that's going to be the case for the Rockets. That's the good news. It doesn't guarantee they're going to win, because just like the Rockets are really good, so are the Warriors. But I think ultimately, we see now that the data over the first 94 games, it's legitimate. The Rockets are in their class, and it's just going to come down to who makes plays. And ultimately, in my opinion, what I think is going to swing the series, you're going to have one or two games where it actually is there for the taking in the final 5 minutes. The first game, it wasn't quite as much of a blowout as the second game was in favor of Houston, but by and large, with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, you had a pretty good indication of who was going to win with 6 minutes left in the fourth, both Game 1 and Game 2. There's going to be a couple of games, at least one, maybe two, somewhere where you don't, and whichever team can make the plays late, that's probably what's going to swing this series. Ultimately, it kind of reminds me of the 2015 semis. I mentioned that Rockets-Clippers series when they came back from 3-1. Hopefully, they don't have to come back from 3-1 in this series, but the reason I think of that series in parallel to this one is that the Rockets lost a home game one, and from then on out, there were a lot of blowouts. There was a lot of holding serve at home, and ultimately, there was just one game, the Game 6, in which Corey Brewer and Josh Smith led the comeback, that was truly there for the taking. Anybody's ballgame with 6 minutes to go. The Rockets out-executed the Clips down the stretch, and my hunch is you're going to have one or two. I don't know if it's in Oakland. Well, I guess one of them's got to be in Oakland because the Warriors have home court now. I don't see that as especially daunting because both these teams are so good that when they're playing their game, they're fully capable of winning on the road. The Rockets are just the same way the Warriors did in Game 1. But ultimately, at least, but my guess, I don't see the Rockets blowing out the Warriors in Oakland. It's going to come down to at least one of these upcoming two games, and perhaps three in Oakland is going to be there for the taking the final 6 minutes, and the Stars and the Rockets, and, well, role players too. We have to mention them, because certainly James Harden and Chris Paul are willing passers. If P.J. Tucker, Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon has an open three, especially in the corner, then they're certainly willing to distribute that. But either way, it's going to come down to which team can make a play in the final 6 minutes. We haven't seen that yet, and ultimately, that's when the Rockets have to make hay. They have to be Clutch City, which is what this franchise is known for, and be able to take a swing game. It hasn't happened yet, but it's going to, and if the Rockets are able to take it, especially in Oakland, then ultimately I think you feel pretty good about them winning the series. Now, I wanted to lead off with the optimistic viewpoint of how do they win the series. But I also want to address the scenario of what if they don't? Because as discussed, there's no real shame in losing to the Warriors. Would it suck in a season you have James Harden and Chris Paul in their primes, win 65 games, not to win the NBA title? Yes, it would suck not to win with that much talent. However, the Warriors, they won the West 3 straight years after adding Kevin Durant to a 73-win team, is probably the most talented squad in the history of the NBA. So while it would be frustrating, other than getting swept and embarrassed, which is certainly not going to happen now, series tied at 1 after the Rockets won game 2 by 22, could have won it by nearly 40 had they not called off the dogs, then it's pretty clear that yes, the Rockets are in Golden State's class. So it's very possible that even though they are in that class, that Golden State, with their top-heavy 4 All-Stars, Steph, KD, especially if Steph gets going again, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, they just beat you. And so in this 30,000-foot episode, I want to discuss what, in my opinion, that would mean going forward. I think, first things first, I would love to see the Rockets, if they lose, take at least one more game. Because I know Game 2 was a blowout, but ultimately, if you lose 4-1, it's the same as the 2015 Western Conference Finals between these teams. It's the same as the 2016 first round. And even though in those series, the Rockets were down 2-0 in one, 3-0 in the other, and it never felt or looked, based on the regular season profile, even close to as comparable as the two teams are now, at the same time, you would see some narratives of, ho-hum, the Warriors beat the Rockets in 5 games again. You'd hear some referencing gentleman's sweep. So it'd be nice to take it to at least 6 or 7 if you lose. The good news is I think the Rockets are fully capable of doing that because at a very bare minimum, they're not going to be eliminated without short of 6 games unless they were to lose another game at Toyota Center. And I think you feel pretty good about your chances to compete with Golden State in that building based on how well things went in Wednesday night's game 2. But perception is important because if the Rockets don't beat Golden State, of course, the next step is to go after LeBron James, Paul George, or other stars. Because if you don't beat Golden State, the far and away likely reason is because they've got 4 All-Stars to your 2. And the same way they built their super team by adding Kevin Durant, well, there are options that the Rockets could go after. Of course, it starts, in my opinion, with LeBron and Paul George. But there are other names potentially on the trade market as well. You have to wait until this summer to go there. I'm not going to go too deep into it now because, well, you're in the middle of Western Conference Finals. It's about the here and now. But there's a difference in how you go out. Do you go out swept and looking mentally defeated and uncompetitive the way, say, the Raptors did against Cleveland? Or do you go out making the NBA truly respect you and say, wow, this Rockets team is really good. They're just not quite at the level of the 3-time defending Western Conference champions, the Golden State Warriors, with Kevin Durant added on top of a 73-win team, effectively. Now, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but ultimately, that's why, at a bare minimum, I think taking one more game is enormous, because even if you lose, at that point, I think there's something that you can at least build on. Now, as far as the scenarios where you lose, to me, there's a glass half empty and a glass half full way to look at it. The glass half empty, and there's some truth to it, the Rockets do have a lot of veterans. PJ Tucker, Trevor Ariza, Chris Paul. These are all key pieces of your rotation that are in their 30s. Really, other than Clint Capella, there's no one in your rotation that's still getting better. Now, I'm not saying that James Harden isn't still adding things to his game year after year, same as Chris Paul, but Clint Capella is the only real guy in your rotation that is still on an upward, what would normally be considered an upward career trajectory. So while I wouldn't expect the Rockets to just fall off the map the next year, at the same time, it's not as if the Rockets are just an especially young team that's going to keep getting better. So to some degree, at least physiologically, it would feel like a missed opportunity in what is kind of the fading prime years for some of this current Rockets core. The flip side to that is that the Rockets have enough depth to where I think a lot of these guys can age gracefully because it's not an especially thin team where they're having to lean on guys for extended minutes. Maybe in the very short term they do because of the Luke Bamute situation. I'll talk about him in the third segment coming up. But in terms of the season as a whole, we saw it through 82 games. The Rockets are deeper than they've really ever been in the Daryl Morey era. So I think that can help these guys age gracefully. But as far as what a loss to the Warriors would mean in that context, I think what you have to remember, this is the first year that so many members of this core are in Houston. And it's not 100% that all of these guys come back, but Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute, these are your free agents. Now, of course, it's not Trevor's first year in Houston, but I'm just pointing out the free agents, Clint Capella. The Rockets have had enough success now. Realistically, they could lose 4-1 in the series, and I think the far and away top goal for the Rockets this offseason is going to be to keep this team together. Now, hopefully you can add to it with someone like LeBron James or Paul George. We'll see. But at bare minimum, they're going to want to keep this team together, the guys that are free agents to be. So then turning to, you look at how long these guys have been in Houston. Chris Paul, PJ Tucker, Luke Bamute, Gerald Green. This is year one for those guys. This is not a team that has been through the battles over and over again. Now, yes, they have good chemistry. They worked out in the off season together. And so I think it came together quicker than it would in a lot of situations. But at least half of the Rockets' current rotation is comprised of guys who were not there a year ago. And typically, barring injuries, teams get better the more they play together. For all the Warriors' dominance, and yes, I do realize they switched head coaches, Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr in there, that played some role, but it wasn't the only role. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, they got better with each passing year in terms of how they played together. Even before they added Kevin Durant, we saw them evolve from a team that was losing in the first round to a squad that won an NBA title and then backed it up the next year with 73 wins, the most in the history of the NBA. Organic growth is a thing. So the glass half empty, you look at it and say, well, if the Rockets were to lose, you have these guys that are in their 30s, how many more prime years do they have left? The glass half full is that, hey, it is a deep rotation, so you can manage these guys deeper into their 30s than you might otherwise. And secondly, there's a lot to be built just from being able to come back for a second year. This is year one of the Chris Paul-James Harden partnership. Remember all the chemistry questions that everyone had before the year, and then Chris Paul missed most of the first 15 games of the season on top of that? It's easy to forget that, based on how successful it's been. But there were a lot of things that had to be ironed out in terms of chemistry. And as good as they are now, put them together for another year, they could be even better. Organic growth is a real thing. So as far as which case I believe, as usual, I think there's truth to both of those, and it's somewhere in the middle. But the reality is you can make a pretty convincing case that the Rockets would be even better in terms of their chemistry a year from now just based on bringing back largely the same rotation as opposed to mixing in nearly half of it new the way they have this year. So if you have that benefit and add to it the potential of a team that competes with the Warriors in a way that no one else has. They're already the first team not to be down 2-0 after two games. That's big in and of itself because everybody in the world knows the Warriors wanted to land that haymaker in game two. Then yeah, if the Rockets go 6 or 7 games and lose, I think that positions them very, very well for the big names this summer that might try and force their way to Houston, and LeBron James, Paul George, those types, trade being the most likely and opt-in the same way the Rockets got Chris Paul last June. To me, you don't want to lose by any stretch, and I'm not saying you should expect to, but if the Rockets go out in 6 or 7 games in which they push the Warriors, yes, there are some benefits to that. I'm not saying it's a silver lining. I'm not saying you have to be satisfied. I'm just saying that if the Rockets go out competitively, sometimes there's not much difference. I would say, for example, for the Warriors, it's either they win or they lose. If they were to get swept versus if they lose in 6 or 7 games, in their situation, it really doesn't matter. In the Rockets' situation, it does matter, in my opinion. They've already clearly started that with a resounding win in Game 2, but if you back it up with at least one more win in this series, hopefully you close it out and win 4, but even if you just win 2 or 3, then in my opinion, it positions the team very well heading into this June and July when you know Daryl Morey is looking to be active, as he always is. Final segment, turning it back to the micro, the day-to-day. I promised updates earlier on Chris Paul and Luke Bamute. Didn't get much. I was the only one, I think we all knew, because Chris Paul would downplay it. But somebody had to ask the question about his foot, and he told me, yeah, I'm all right. I'm good. But I think it's actions over words in a lot of cases. And Chris Paul, he did practice today. I didn't see a limp. I didn't see anything around his foot or ankle. Mike D'Antoni did acknowledge that he had something going on with his foot. It looked kind of like Achilles to me, which, as I said, with players in their 30s, especially high mileage as you get toward the end of a season, can happen from time to time. What I would say is that the Rockets got lucky from the standpoint of this three-day break. Now, maybe the Warriors do as well, because Steph Curry with the grade 2 MCL, it gives him time to rest up as well. But with Curry's being a confirmed injury, when you're dealing with a ligament, in my opinion, in 3 days is probably less likely to be as impactful to a guy like that, because the only way that's going to get better is really months of rest over the offseason, the same way we saw it 2 years ago. We had the grade 1 MCL, but that mitigated Curry to some degree in the Western Conference Finals and eventually their NBA Finals loss to the Cavaliers. I think with Chris Paul, you're looking at some sort of minor tendonitis flare-up, in my opinion. That's not an official diagnosis, that's just my guess based on some of the sports medicine people I've talked to, some of the symptoms we saw in terms of the wrap around his foot/ankle area in the fourth quarter of Wednesday's game 2. But today, he did practice. I didn't see the limp. He was out there. He downplayed himself. But the proof is that he did practice, and Mike D'Antoni says that it's nothing that's going to sideline him. So ultimately, at this point, you have to take him at their word. Now, maybe if he starts limping again, then you have to consider it as something more. But for right now, I fully expect him to be out there Sunday, and just the same way in game 2, even though he was probably a little limited by it. At the same time, you couldn't really tell. We saw him making his own mixtape in that game because there's that much adrenaline pumping through him. And ultimately, I think the Rockets probably got a good break, and that when this seemed to flare up the most, well, now they've got 3 days off to where they don't have to push him too hard in terms of game scenarios, playing 40 minutes a night. Now, Mike D'Antoni did say at one point during today's interviews with the media that the Rockets have to be mindful that starting Sunday, they're going to be every other day the rest of the series. So you're not going to have this rare 3 day off period. You're only going to have 1 day off between games the rest of the way. And he was saying that, well, in the context of all of his injuries, but I think what he really meant was in the context of the short rotation they used in game 2, which was certainly a desperation scenario for the Rockets, but it was also to do with Luke Bamute, who started very slowly, missed 3 more shots right at the rim in the first half, and then barely appeared in the second half, did not appear when the game had any sort of significance to it, and was replaced by Gerald Green, the Rockets effectively going to a 7-man rotation. And it worked. Part of the reason they did that was because they could with these 3 days off. But I think Mike is hinting at the fact that going forward, they may not have that luxury of extending guys because you're going to be in a every other day mindset to where you only have 1 day off between games. And even that 1 day off, of course, you're going to want to be practicing with the stakes as high as they are in this series. By the way, side note, as far as things they're working on in practice, we'll talk about it more in our show tomorrow. But D'Antoni also said today they cut down their defensive miscommunication errors from about 35 in game 1 to 20 in game 2. That's nearly cutting it in half, which is very, very good progress from one game to the next. And of course, that a lot to do with why the Rockets were so much more effective on the defensive end of the court in game 2, the 22-point win. Getting back, though, to the rotation, the depth, and Luke Bamute. People keep asking me about it. I don't think it's physical pain for Luke. He was the first one out today. He's shooting. I don't think he is actively in pain. I think it's that when you dislocate that shoulder twice, then you're fearing what's going to happen when you're inside, if you're going to take contact on it again. And ultimately, I think the way things started in game 1, a couple of those shots rolled off, and then at that point it becomes mental. And of course, you can trace it back originally to the shoulder, but at this point I think it's less about him physically being in pain, or even necessarily directly in fear of being in pain, and it's more, for whatever reason, he got himself in a mental funk. Now, maybe being on the road, that's a scenario where, in my opinion, it might help Luke. And the Rockets, Mike D'Antoni said they're going to watch him closely in practice today, see how he's moving, see how he's finishing, and go from there. My experience with NBA players is that when they get into mental funk, sometimes it can be easier on the road where, you know, the fans are going to boo you regardless. Whereas at home, when things aren't going your way, you can hear the groans, you can hear the fans sometimes yelling, "Why is that guy out there?" And you feel like you're letting everyone down. On the road, it's easier to just buckle in because they're going to be booing you regardless and adapt. And maybe that's the case for Luke. Ultimately, they're going to watch him in practice today. My guess is that the Rockets are going to give him every opportunity to play. Now, they might do it in shorter bursts, say get him 3-4 minutes here, then another 3-minute stretch later, trying to get him some positive reinforcement in terms of seeing a shot or two go down. And then if they do, maybe you can stretch it out. And if he's not going, then rather than just have it become kind of self-defeating, you can put in Gerald Green a little bit earlier. But I do think to fill those minutes, they need and want Luke Bamute to play, It's just he needs to be effective. In other words, no matter how much he gives you defensively, if he's worse on offense, which he has been largely since coming back, then it's not going to help you that much. So, and in many ways, it can hurt you. So my guess is he does get a look in game three, but they're going to have a fairly tight leash. Hopefully being on the road helps him. And as far as what's going on, I don't think he's actively in pain with the shoulder. I think it's mental. I think during this playoff run, and of course everything's overanalyzed in the playoffs relative to the regular season, I think he started in that Utah series a little tentative, and the same early on in the Golden State series, and then the results went bad. And then at this point, you know, I think maybe it started with a little bit of fear of taking contact on that shoulder, and now it's partially because, oh my God, I know I'm shooting 26% or whatever the number is. I don't have it right in front of me, and I've got to figure out a way to get out of that. And so you add that to the anxiety over the shoulder, and of course you have the murmurs of the home crowd, and there's just a lot of things that mentally, I think, have him out of sorts. So I think at this point, it does trace back to the shoulder physically, so I do think, mentioned earlier, bringing him back next year, because certainly the year as a whole, he's been very valuable to you with his defense, and if they're able to do that with the mid-level exception, another reason the Rockets need to stay as an above-the-cap team, of course, on top of keeping Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, Clint Capela, their free agents, all with cap holds. Another reason is that you stay above the cap, you have the mid-level exception, the lower one, but you do have it to give to Luke Bamute. You want to bring him back, and physically, I do think, of course, there'll be a lot more improvement when you give him an offseason to get right, maybe even have the surgery, if that's what he needs, to get that shoulder all the way healthy. But for now, I think there might be some anxiety over the physicality and taking shots, but I don't think it's mostly physical. It originates from that, but I think at this point it's mental. It's in his head, and so hopefully a few days off between games and maybe going on the road instead of at home, maybe that's the ticket to turning things around for him. He was solid in the two games in Salt Lake City, so hopefully you can build off of that, and then we'll see what happens, of course, with where the Rockets are in the series and what happens when he gets back to Toyota Center for next Thursday's Game 5. Anyway, that's enough talk for one off day. Don't want to go on too long because, as promised, we do have a good guest tomorrow to break down more of the macro, the short-term X's and O's, so we'll be talking again very soon. For now, though, if you want any more content from me, the best place to get it, as always, is on Twitter. I am at Ben Dubose, simply my name. The show is at Locked on Rockets on Twitter. I've also got an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook account at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, and a website at lockedonrockets.com, all places that you can access our content. Ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, a Rockets fan, you a person, you a businessman, whatever it may be, don't hesitate to reach out. Also, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, etc. Wherever you listen to us, please subscribe if you've not already. Leave us 5-star reviews because in addition to supporting our sponsors, leaving us those positive reviews and metrics, that's the best way that we can appeal to advertisers and remain financially viable as the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. Once again, today is Friday, so go out, enjoy your weekends. The Rockets are on the flight to the Bay Area tonight, and tomorrow they will resume practice, but rather than be in downtown Houston, which they were today, they'll be in downtown San Francisco. And to help break it down, I'm going to have a special guest that's traveling with the team, so stay tuned for that tomorrow. For now, though, thanks for listening, and have a lovely weekend, and we'll be talking again soon right here at Locked on Rockets, the home for daily podcast discussion on Houston Rockets basketball.